Today's edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the 10th day of January. I'm going to keep wanting to say July. It's too damn cold to be July. 2020. I'm Derek Hunter. 300 and some odd shopping days till election day. Welcome to it. I'm Derek Hunter, the host. It is the Friday interview edition of the program. I thought, you know, well, I could make up that it's a 40-minute interview, and it's a damn good interview, and I'm really happy with the interview. It's with Alan Dershowitz, and we talk about his new book, which is about being accused by an accuser of Jeffrey Epstein and how he's defending himself for that. We talk about that. We talk about Jeffrey Epstein. We talk about the Me Too movement. He goes off about David Boies, the big muckety-muck Democrat lawyer that Al Gore hired for the 2000 election recount. Remember that? Not a fan. He's got some really choice things to say about David Boies. It's like, wow, if they weren't already suing each other, I was thinking somebody's going to sue somebody over this, but they're already suing each other. I wouldn't be surprised if this were used in evidence. Who knows? But I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know anything about that crap. But we talk about that. We talk about impeachment. We get into a whole bunch of stuff. He's a very bright guy, liberal guy. We also talk about why he feels like the Democratic Party left him, why he can't be a part of what the Democratic Party is, even though he's still liberal. So we're going to get into all of that. And I thought, well, I could talk about the Iranian flight being shot down first and how the liberal media is blaming the United States. They're talking about, I'm going to do it really quickly. If you look at the social media feeds of a lot of journalists and a lot of left-wing activists and media types, but they're all the same. They're all Democrats. They use the word crossfire. Crossfire. These victims were caught in the crossfire. And there was no crossfire on the day that this plane was shot down. All that happened was the United States killed General Soleimani, Qasem Soleimani. Soleimani killed him, blew him up. Because he deserved it, because he had killed a whole bunch of Americans, an evil SOB. Then the Iranians vowed revenge. They launched 15 missiles into Iraq, and then they shot down a passenger jet because they mistook it, because they're stupid, for an American plane that somehow made it all the way to Tehran without being noticed, even though that plane had just taken off from the Tehran airport. You want to talk about the clown show? Remember this incident when you next hear some liberal talk about how a long and costly war and how damaging a war would be with Iran, as if they are somehow on par with us militarily. A plane just took off from their own airport. They panicked, mistook it for an American fighter jet of some sort, and blew it out of the sky. You're not dealing with a first world mentality. Oh, they might have some advanced weapon systems, but do they know how to use them? Anyway, I thought about I could go off on that and all the other stuff, but I thought, you know what, this Dershowitz interview, I enjoy so much. I just want to get to it. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to get to it and wish you a happy weekend and thank our wonderful sponsor, Ancient Life Oil. Look, is life giving you pains? Is your body giving you pains? You got problems, aches, and joints. You don't know what to do, and the conventional crap isn't working. Try CBD oil. See what all the fuss is about. See what people are talking about. And the best CBD oil, 100% pure organic CBD oil, is from ancientlifeoil.com. You go there. You check it out, you enter promo code Derek at checkout, and you get 10% off your order. You can't beat that. 10% off Look, do some research. Find out what people are saying about CBD oil. If you know my dad, talk to my dad about CBD oil and say, well, does that stuff really work? And he will tell you he's a believer. He wasn't when I first, he gave me the weirdest look when I said, Dad, try this stuff. Let me put it in your coffee. And he looked at me and he couldn't taste it. And he's like, "That's what are you doing? What is this thing?" And then a little bit later, I said, how's your hip feeling as we were at the Air and Space Museum? And he said, actually, it's pretty good. Yeah, that's how CBD oil works. Mine, I don't get to choose where it uses. It goes in your body and it fixes what's wrong. Mine relieves my eye strain at the end of the day. My job requires me to stare at computer screens all day. And that really puts a little hankering on the eyes. CBD oil from ancientlifeoil.com takes care of that problem. But do your own research. Talk to your friends. Talk to your family. Talk to the people you know. I bet you somebody's using it and somebody's swearing by it. You should too. It's not going to get you high. It's not marijuana. It's from the cannabis plant. It will not get you high, but it will get you fixed up. AncientLifeOil.com, enter promo code Derek. You get 10% off your entire order. Okay, now it is time to bid you adieu, to wish you a very happy weekend, and listen to the interview. If you like even if you don't like the interview, no matter what you think of the interview, shoot me an email, Derek@DailyCaller.com. I want to know what you guys thought of the interview. And oh, by the way, can I just say thank you to everybody? I'm not going to name names because I didn't get permission to name names, but I went into the Daily Caller office yesterday for the first time since before Christmas to record the interview with Professor Dershowitz, and I got all of your Christmas cards and letters and offers of support. I really appreciate all of it. I even got a some people were very generous, and I'm going to send you, if I can, to try and dig out. I'm horrible at these things. I love getting real mail. It's so weird. It's such a novelty. I didn't really grow up at a time when people would write you letters, and so getting letters is neat. Now the only mail I get are bills and crap from Amazon, but going to the office and getting real mail is really cool, and I appreciate that. And those of you who enclosed support, I owe you more than I could ever say. And somebody sent in it's not a bobblehead of Donald Trump. It's a bobble middle finger. I don't know. Amazon sells everything. It's Donald Trump, a figure of Donald Trump flipping the bird. The finger, the hand bobbles around flipping the bird. And it says up at the top of his head, one side says, "Hey, liberals," and the other side says, "Hey, media." A little redundant, but I loved it, and Quinn loved it too. She doesn't understand it yet, I hope, but she loved flipping the finger around, and I enjoyed laughing at her as she did it. So thank you, thank you, thank you to everybody out there for all of the support. Every little bit helps, and if you want to help, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast is how you can throw a couple bucks into the kitty if you're so inclined, or you can just mail me a letter and tell me how awesome or awful I am. I open them both. I read them both. The limerick was nice that somebody sent in. But thank you, and Merry Christmas back to all of you. Now, I'm talked way too much. Quinn fell and like cracked her lip open tonight, so she's in the other room not doing all that well, which is also why I need to go. Thank you again. Here is my interview with Professor Alan Dershowitz. All right. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Daily Caller podcast, the Friday video edition, where we bring somebody who is much more learned, much more intelligent than we are into our world and pick their brains and find out what's going on with them. Today is no exception, except this is possibly the biggest brain we've ever had, certainly the one with the highest billable price per hour. We're joined by Professor Alan Dershowitz, Professor Emeritus at Harvard University, author of 41 books, which is frankly more than I've read. And his latest book is Guilt by Accusation, The Challenge of Proving Innocence in the Era of Me Too. And we're going to talk about all sorts of things with the professor. Professor, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking the time.
Well, thank you. But there's no relationship between intelligence and billable hours. I know some of the dumbest people around that bill at extraordinary rates. And even dumber clients pay them for it.
This is true, and that's sort of relevant to the theme of your book. Normally, I ask an author what inspired them to write the book, but what inspired you to write this book has been all throughout the news for the past year. You were accused by one of Jeffrey Epstein, a former client of yours, one of his accusers, of living this deviant lifestyle and having sex with minors. And unlike most of the other accused who went into hiding in some degree, spoke through publicists, you decided to speak for yourself. And first of all, talk about when you first heard the allegations against you, what was the first reaction you had? Because you vehemently deny that. So we're going to go at it from that perspective.
Sure. Well, it was laughable. I mean, I've lived a life, 50 years teaching at Harvard, married for 30 some odd years. I've never had sex with anybody other than my wife during the relevant time period. I don't flirt. I don't touch people. I don't grab people. 50 years at Harvard, not a single complaint. So when my wife and I heard about it, we just laughed. We knew it was utterly untrue and that the woman had simply made up the story. But then we got the evidence. We have emails that she tried to suppress in which she admitted she never met me, in which she was told by a friend to put me in the book. It will help make money for her, even though she never met me. And then she put me in. She saw once with Jeffrey Epstein talking about business, but that she never had sex with me. She told the FBI she never had sex with me. She told her best friend she never had sex with me. She told her boyfriend she never had sex with me. The FBI did an investigation and established she never had sex with me, the former director. And then her own lawyer admitted in a surreptitiously recorded tape, he didn't know he was being taped, he never would have been so honest, that it was wrong to accuse me and that it was impossible for me to have been in the place that she said she met me. And then we proved that she had made false accusations against Tipper Gore, Al Gore, Bill Clinton. She had lied about her age. There could never be a clearer case of innocence. It's the only Me Too case where the accuser never met the accused. And yet people continued to believe it, which is why I decided to write my book. My friends all said, don't write the book. It'll go away if you don't write the book. But if you write the book, it'll bring more attention to it. Well, I want to bring more attention to it. I'm a victim of a serious crime, and victims should speak out. I don't want it to go away. I want her to go to prison. I want her lawyers to be disbarred. I want justice to be done. I want the world to know this is a plan, a plot to try to frame me for money. And it can't be allowed to succeed because otherwise many other unscrupulous lawyers and many other unscrupulous women will begin to accuse people of things they didn't do. It's beginning already, and I'm fighting back.
I want to talk about the lawyer in a second because there's a whole set of ethics there, and he has a history of his own that's problematic. But to talk about the accuser for a second, and you find yourself in a delicate situation when accused in this situation, especially in the fervor of the Me Too movement, where it was immediately assumed to be guilty. Harvey Weinstein, I think, you know, the rumors were out there forever, and behind that, everybody run risk of being crushed in that one. And then there's you. It doesn't really make a lot of sense, except for in the fervor of the moment, that Alan Dershowitz, law professor, would be lumped in with Kevin Spacey and all these Hollywood muckety-mucks and the media types and whatnot. So when you decide to fight back, you had been a known commodity to all of these people in the media. You've been on television, you know, a million times. Did you find anybody willing to not believe you, but at least hear you out in the media?
It's a great question. Everybody believed me and nobody would put me on their shows. Everybody believed me. Everybody told me they knew it was false. One editor called me and said, this is the worst scandal he's ever seen. He wants to write about it. And then he calls me back saying, my editor won't let me attack a woman in the Me Too movement. Julie Brown, the writer for the Miami Herald, who has always been proposed for Pulitzer Prizes, she relied on the credibility of my accuser. I sent her a long letter, which is in the book, documenting all the lies this woman told and saying you have an obligation to your reader to at least alert them to the fact that this is a woman with a history of lying. Wouldn't do it. Wouldn't put in anything negative. So although my book's doing very well on Amazon, you can buy it on Kindle for $2, and people are reading it, it has not received a single review from the mainstream media, not a single interview from the mainstream media. Nobody's prepared to take on the Me Too movement, which is why I am alone out there, why I wrote this book, why I hope people will read the book and join me in my attempt to validate the Me Too movement, because it's a good movement. Make sure it isn't hijacked by greed. You know, it was Eric Hoffer, the philosopher, who once said, every cause starts as a movement, then it becomes a business, ultimately a racket. And my job is to prevent Me Too from becoming a racket. David Boies is trying to turn it into a racket. He's trying to exploit the women and exploit financial issues. He went to Leslie Wexner, personally went to Leslie Wexner and his lawyers, and told them.
Now, Leslie Wexner was the owner, CEO of Victoria's Secret.
Victoria's Secret and the Limited, and said, look, the same woman that accused Dershowitz of having sex with him seven times accused you between 5 and 10 times, not wearing a condom, making her wear Victoria's Secret type lingerie, and they had a meeting. And after the meeting, his name disappeared. So there are only two alternatives. Either David Boies believed that he was telling the truth, and that meant that his client was lying and making up a story, or he believed his client, in which case, why would he make Leslie Wexner's name disappear unless large payments were made? We're going to find that out at my trial, because I am suing them, and the truth will come out.
David Boies is a name you've mentioned a couple of times. We'll skip ahead to him right now, just because people are thinking, I know that name from somewhere. Well, maybe you read John Carreyrou's book, Bad Blood. He was on the board of Theranos and the attorney for Theranos, who was basically running protective duties for that company that turned out to be a fraud. But also the political world, he represented Al Gore in the 2000 Florida recount, both for the Florida Supreme Court and the U.S. Supreme Court. He's sort of portrayed in the media as a really sort of championing sort of lawyer, crusading lawyer. But your interactions with him, before we get to what he's done in your case, I assume you're both, you know, high-profile attorneys. You've had known one another, dealt with one another professionally and personally for a long time. Were you surprised at what you found when dealing with him in an adversarial role in this situation compared to what you thought of him as a person and a lawyer before this?
I never thought much of him as a person. He had a reputation. He was called basically the Jeffrey Epstein of the bar. He had a reputation for having sex with paralegals, with clients, with people in his law firm. He had a terrible, terrible reputation sexually. Everybody knew it. But he had a reputation as being a decent lawyer. My views of that have changed. Not only was he involved in questionably ethical conduct in the Theranos case, but in the Emma Klein case, a woman who wrote a book, he and his law firm basically threatened the woman to expose her sex life unless big buck money was paid. He was charged with unethical conduct, he and his firm, more than any other large firm that I know of in American history. They have the worst record. In my book, I document that record. I have list after list of what they've done over the years that have caused them to be accused of doing unethical things, of paying a witness to testify in a certain way, a contingent fee to a witness, saying we'll give you more money if you win the case for us as a witness. Utterly improper behavior. But so he has a, on the other hand, I've never been charged with unethical conduct. I've never been accused by a client or anybody else of any doing anything wrong. I was never accused in 50 years at Harvard of doing anything inappropriate in relation to sexuality. So when you compare my record, which is 100% clean, with his record, which is filthy and despicable, and the record of his client, filled with lies and perjury and false accusations against honorable people and lying about her age, how can anybody presume that they are telling the truth and I am not? I also have the evidence. I have the emails all documented in the book. I have my travel records proving I couldn't have been in any of the places she said she met me, and her lawyer admitting after reading the travel records that obviously it was impossible for me to be in those places.
That's one of the things I want to touch on, because you keep very meticulous records of your day,
right?
And you have for 40 or 50 years, where you carry around a book and you write down where you had lunch, you know, all everything. It's like a your children and grandchildren will be able to read it and essentially relive your life. It's
this little Harvard Coop book. I have them going back to 1964. And I have in it, you know, every event in my life. And then I go back and I can check them against my travel records, my American Express records, my telephone records, cell phone records, being on television. I can account for every single day in the 2 years that this woman, Virginia Gouffre, knew Jeffrey Epstein. And I can prove categorically I could not have been on the island. I could not have been on the ranch. I could not have been in the airplane. I could not have been In other places, she said she encountered me. And when her lawyer read through this, he was flabbergasted. He said, I wish I had kept records like that. It's clear now. It's impossible that she's telling the truth. She's wrong, simply wrong. I have that on tape from her own lawyer. How can anybody any longer dispute my innocence?
But when you have her lawyer saying that, and her lawyer still goes forward and still accuses you, where is the bar on something like this? If you have this tape, I mean, it's not the audio in the book, but you have this tape. That should, to me, seem like a disbarrable offense. Why have there not been motions against Boies?
I have brought charges against Boies. And in fact, he threatened me through three people that unless I withdraw my bar charges, he's going to come up with another woman to accuse me. And so he did. He came up with a woman named Sarah Ransom, who had tried to get the Daily New York Post to publish her account that she had sex tapes of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump and Bill Clinton and Richard Branson. She ultimately admitted she made the whole story up, that she's a liar and that she had no such sex tapes. But I have her emails in which she says she has the sex tapes. This is the quality of the people that David Boies is relying on. I believe that a lawyer who relies on the credibility of a woman like Sarah Ransom is suborning perjury and should be disbarred.
This, to people listening to this and hearing it for the first time, because this isn't something that has gotten nearly the write-up as the accusations against you, your defense is not out there, and that's part of the reason why you wrote the book, Guilty by Accusation. People hear this and they think it sounds like a movie, like it's a, you know, it's a, you, you've written a book that became a movie.
I hope to make it into a movie, because remember, I have nothing to hide. I have lived a perfectly clean life. I have nothing to hide. That's why I've never refused to answer a single question from the media since the end of 2014. And why Virginia Giuffre has never been willing to make an accusation against me to the media, because she knows if she does, I'll sue her for defamation. She hides her accusations in legal documents, which she claims are immune from any kind of a lawsuit. So I'm happy for a movie to be made of it. I'm happy for an investigation. I've asked the FBI to investigate me, to come to the trial and investigate me and her and see who's committing perjury. Of course, it's she who's committing perjury.
But it's the unbelievability. It seems absurd because it does seem like something that Hollywood would pass on for being so absurd. As somebody who spent their life as a lawyer, as you know, the defense attorney and not the defendant, there's a different world there when you're talking to a client rather than you being the client. What, as your 50 years plus in the legal profession and as a law professor, what surprised you the most of how the system works differently from being, you know, the accuser, if you will, the attorney, to being the accused? Did you find anything you're like, oh my God, you've never had the client perspective like this before. Is there something about it that opened your eyes about the system itself?
Oh, yeah, very, very much so. First, when people came to me and said they were totally innocent, that they were a case of mistaken identification, I would often doubt that. I would say, gee, the system doesn't really allow for that. Probably it's a gray area, maybe you're guilty. Now, when people come to me and say, you know, I didn't do it, I was never anywhere near the scene, I'm going to believe them, you know, at least require the other side to disprove it. So I'm much more sympathetic to my clients than I think I was over the first 50 years of my career. It's unimaginable how it feels when you've lived a life of complete veracity and loyalty to be accused of something. And for people to write on the internet that you're a pedophile. I mean, the woman who accused me admits she was 18. Basically, at the time, it never happened. There was never any accusation, but pedophile is not somebody who has sex with an 18-year-old. But that word is all over the place, a baby and then the F word after that. It's a horrible thing for my family. It's a horrible thing for me, which is why I decided to fight back. Friends told me, you know, the story will go away if you just leave it alone. Don't write a book. But I decided I don't want the story to go away. I want justice to prevail. I'm a victim here. I'm a victim of a complete frame up for money by bad people. And I want the world to know that. I want the world to know who the guilty people are and that I'm the victim of a plot to try to get money through me. I'm not going to let them get away with it. I'm going to do this to the day I die. And when I die, my wife will take over. And when she dies, my children and then my grandchildren. We're never going to let this go until justice prevails, until David Boies is disbarred, which is what he deserves to have happen to him, and until Virginia Giuffre ends up in prison.
And that's a very tall order for anybody, let alone somebody. You've got a name, you've got the institutional knowledge, you've got the fame, the attention, you can draw a shine a light on this, you have the ability that most of us don't have to be able to pursue this, because this is not cheap. This is going to cost you a fortune.
It has already,
But what is the end result? They sued you. They sued you civilly? Was that what it was originally?
Oh, no. Nobody would ever bring in criminal charges. There's no evidence. The evidence is all overwhelming the other way. Yeah.
But people looking at this, they see that there's no deterrent to bringing a civil suit. We hear these cases all the time of somebody slips at a baseball stadium and they sue the team. They sue the visiting team. They sue the hot dog vendors. They sue the people who painted the seats and everything like that. Because why not? There's nothing to lose. Over in the UK, they have a system of loser pays.
And I wish we had here in this case,
Is there much of a prospect of that? You've taught lawyers, you've sent them out into the wild for 50-plus years. Do you think there's an appetite for that, or does nobody want to rock the boat because the gravy train rests on the boat?
Well, there's that gravy train, and lawyers who bring these lawsuits are going to try to oppose any such accountability, but I think the public would like to see some accountability among lawyers. Right now, a lawyer or a woman can accuse you of anything, of having sex with a camel, and as long
one
as
time in college,
right? As long as she puts it in a court proceeding, she's immune from you suing her for defamation. But if you dare to say no, it's not true, she's not telling the truth, she can then sue you for defamation. So the system is set up to incentivize liars and their lawyers to tell untruths and to falsely accuse. Also, nobody ever charges women with perjury if they make up stories about men. That has to stop. We have to start charging people with perjury if they deliberately and willfully misuse the legal system. You know, even the Ten Commandments has as one of its commandments, thou shalt not bear false witness. And the punishment in the Bible is if you bear false witness against somebody, you get the penalty he or she would have gotten had the accusations turned out to be true. I would like to see a system like that established in the United States, where people who bear false witness, who perjure themselves, get punished. That's why I've invited the FBI to investigate me. I will come in. I've already spoken to the U.S. attorney on my own. I spoke to the district attorney. I've offered to go and speak to the FBI. I want this case thoroughly investigated. It was already investigated by the former head of the FBI, who concluded that I was completely innocent, but I want the current FBI to investigate. I put my hands out. You think I committed perjury? Arrest me. Put me on trial. But don't let this hang out like this and let people just infer guilt. Where there's an accusation, there must be guilt. Where there's smoke, there must be fire. No, where there's smoke, there's often arson. And in this case, lawyers set the fire and committed arson against me.
You're a liberal guy. You're a lifelong Democrat. I assume you know lots of Democrats, and in the age of Me Too, I imagine when it first started, you were very sympathetic to it. I think most people were, no matter what their politics.
I'm still sympathetic to Me Too if it's used properly.
But you being accused of this and fighting back, what kind of response have you gotten from your fellow academics? And you've already, I mean, you've spoken out in defense of President Trump, which already got you alienated on Martha's Vineyard. With this as a 1-2 punch, how have they responded to this? Are there people, without naming names, because I assume the confidence, they were told you in confidence, are there people who say, yeah, you know what, this system is a little screwed up, the idea of guilty until you prove yourself innocent?
Well, when the first accusation came out, a large number of the Harvard faculty wrote a letter in which they made that point. And, you know, these people know me. They've known me for years. They know about my relationship with my wife. They know that Jeffrey Epstein would never dream of ever even suggesting to me that I do anything improper sexually and that I would have immediately terminated any relationship with him if he had. They know that, and so they were very supportive. But now, after the Me Too movement came along, everybody has been supportive in private but not in public.
But you did represent Jeffrey Epstein, just to be clear. You didn't know the man.
I'm proud of that. I'm proud of that, and I would represent him again. That's what I do. I represent the most despised, the most hated, often the most guilty people, because I strongly believe in that. I represented Klaus von Bülow. I represented O.J. Simpson. I represented Michael Milken. I represented Mike Tyson. And I will continue to represent the most despised people in America. That's fine. If you want to attack me for that, attack me for that. I'll defend myself. I know I'm doing the right thing. I know I'm acting pursuant to the Constitution. But don't accuse me of something you know I didn't do in order to silence me. And that's what's going on. There's an effort to silence my voice on defending Donald Trump's constitutional rights. There's an attempt to silence my voice in defending Israel, defending Benjamin Netanyahu. And they're using this false accusation, which they know to be false, as a way of trying to silence me. Let me give you an example. The 92nd Street Y, which is a place that people, very famous people, have spoken at. I was the second most prominent popular speaker there after Elie Wiesel. But once this accusation came out and the Me Too movement began, they've canceled my life. They will not have me speak about Israel or about Jewish issues or about anything else. And they know I'm innocent, but they say we don't want any trouble. And that's the problem. I lived through McCarthyism. And that's what people said during McCarthyism. We know you're innocent. We just don't want any trouble, so we're not going to have you.
So what is the end result here? A complete exoneration, but it's out there. The internet is forever, as they famously say. And can you ever really get your reputation back?
I hope so. Somebody suggested I title my book Guilt by Google. because, you know, no matter what you prove, Google will find you guilty and Twitter will find you guilty. But no, I'm going to continue to fight. I think I will be completely exonerated in the court proceeding. And then the public will have to judge for themselves. But again, I have not refused to answer a single question asked to me by the media because I have done nothing wrong. I have no record like David Boies does of sexual allegations or of ethical allegations against them. I have no record the way my accuser has of falsely accusing other people or massively lying. My record is clean and clear. I'm proud of it. I'll continue to talk about it. People choose to believe me. Okay. If they don't believe me, you know, that shows the problem that we have in America. If you don't believe overwhelming evidence of innocence, that really, really shows how distorted our system has become.
Why you, though? Why, of all the people out there who could have, if I'm sitting around and I'm thinking I'm going to go for some deep pockets, I'm going to go for somebody who doesn't want to be embarrassed or whatever, and somebody who isn't necessarily well-versed as you or even, you know, a slip-and-fall lawyer on TV, I don't want to go after somebody who knows their rights and not knows the system. Why you? Why would she go after you, and why would Boies continue to go after you after the admissions that you have him on tape making?
Mm-hmm. I'm the perfect target for this reason. The goal was to get $1 billion from Leslie Wexner. What better way of getting $1 billion from Leslie Wexner than going after one of America's most prominent lawyers who will fight back and will publicize it and will have his reputation tarnished, and then going over to Leslie Wexner and saying, see what happened to Dershowitz. You want that to happen to you? The client who accused him accused you five to 10 times, sex, no condom. Wearing Victoria's Secret type lingerie. You want your company to be destroyed? That way, there are ways of resolving that. And whether or not money was paid, I don't know. But it's inconceivable that they would have just dropped the case against Leslie Wexner. So I was the perfect target. I was also one of Jeffrey Epstein's lawyers. I was the only person who was one of his lawyers who also knew him before the crimes were ever exposed. I was introduced to him by Lady Rothschild, a very prominent person. She told me he was a benefactor of Harvard, that he was a close friend of the president of Harvard, the provost of Harvard, of David Gergen, of other people. And I agreed to meet with him and go to his seminars. We were never close personal friends, but we were academic acquaintances. And so I was the perfect person to go after. And I don't think they thought I would fight back and sue them, counter-sue them. But they should have. They picked on the wrong innocent person, and I'm not going to rest until my innocence is clearly established.
One of my colleagues here at the Daily Caller asked me this question about you, and you sort of referenced it in the fact that you've represented some people that most people would not want to be in an elevator with or even the same building. Is there a line for you, or should there be a line for lawyers where you say, yes, everybody deserves a defense, but I can't defend you? Or is it just up to the individual attorney to say, I'm going to have to refer you to somebody else because I cannot represent you?
Well, a good criminal lawyer should be defending everybody who needs a defense. I have myself a couple of lines. I don't defend people who are fugitives, who have escaped from justice, because I'm a lawyer. I want to be part of the justice system. And I have told clients who have been fugitives, if you surrender, if you come back, I will defend you. The other rule I have is I don't defend people who are committing ongoing crimes. That is, people who are in the business of committing crimes, so that if I get you acquitted, you're going to go out and do it again. So I don't represent knowingly members of organized crime, terrorists, drug dealers, that kind of thing. But if you've committed a crime once, I don't care how heinous or serious the crime may be, I will represent you. And when I agreed to represent Jeffrey Epstein, there was no indication that he would continue to do any of the things he was charged with. Likewise with O.J. Simpson, likewise with Klaus von Bülow. And, you know, I never know when somebody's innocent or guilty when I take the case. Often I'm surprised, sometimes pleasantly, sometimes unpleasantly. But I'm not the judge. I'm not the jury. I'm the advocate. And I will continue to defend. And, you know, everybody who disagrees with me changes their mind when their son gets busted on a drug charge or their husband on a DWI charge or a congressman on a corruption charge. Everybody suddenly then understands the need for a criminal defense lawyer. If you don't want to assist him with a criminal defense lawyer, you know, you move to Iran, you move to China, you move to Russia. But if you live in America, everybody who's ever accused of a crime should have a defense attorney. And I can't preach to my students that everybody's entitled to a defense and then say, no, but I'm too big for that. I'm too important. I'm only going to take the cases where people will like me. I'll never forget when I was representing Mike Tyson and Mike Milken at the same time. People would come over to the airport and hug me and say, thank you for defending Mike. And I can always tell whether it was Mike Tyson they were happy I was defending or Mike Milken I was happy they were defending. Nobody liked that I was defending both of them.
Well, nobody likes a defense attorney unless they need one, I think, is a good rule of thumb. I want to pick your brain in the couple of minutes we have left about what's going on Capitol Hill, because we're moving towards impeachment. You're obviously out in front on that as well. First of all, there were reports earlier this week that you were considering joining the president's team for any Senate trial. Is that true?
I can't comment on that. You know, the rules of the bar say you shouldn't be commenting on any request if one occurred to
would
help
you? Would you consider that, or would you prefer to be an outside advisor personally?
Well, you know, I'm not an advisor. I'm an outside commentator. I'm independent. And so the issue is, should I maintain my independence and simply comment? Should I participate in the process as somebody who is independent, as a liberal Democrat? These are all issues that are worth thinking about, but I really can't comment any further than that.
Was there ever a moment's hesitation where you, as the liberal Democrat, you, although not certainly not the left wing, you've sort of left the Democratic Party because of the influx of the squad or the gang of four, as I like to call them. But as a liberal Democrat, I can't imagine you were particularly happy that Donald Trump won the election. Was there a temptation to kind of sit back and just let it happen? Or did you see this as an injustice and just not be able to be quiet, or something make you angry you just couldn't keep to yourself?
Well, I couldn't remain silent. I had come out in the Nixon impeachment. I favored the Nixon impeachment. I thought he did commit impeachable offenses. But I was on the national board of the ACLU, and I opposed their decision to take a position on the impeachment. They favored impeachment as an organization. And I urged them instead to stand up for Richard Nixon's constitutional rights to make sure that the other side didn't take shortcuts. I opposed the impeachment of Bill Clinton and actually did participate in his defense in an informal, behind-the-scenes way. And I couldn't remain silent in the face of this. It was such an abdication of the Constitution. The Constitution provides four grounds for impeachment: treason, no treason here, bribery, no bribery, or other, meaning similar. Other high crimes and misdemeanors. The two charges against him just don't fit any of those criteria.
They're made up. Nobody's ever been charged with these things. No. Obstruction of abuse of power is a tactic, not a crime.
Of course. And if Hillary Clinton had been elected and the Republicans tried to impeach her, I'd be making the same points. In fact, my book, which was entitled The Case Against Impeaching Trump, the original title, we have a cover, even a mock-up cover. The original title was The Case Against Impeaching Hillary Clinton, because I thought the Republicans were going to impeach her. It didn't turn out that she was elected, but basically I wrote the same book. I just changed the title, and I changed some of the facts and the references in the book, but the same constitutional points were made in the book and would have been made had Hillary Clinton been elected president.
How do lawyers prepare for a trial in the Senate, which, you know, has similarities to a court of law, but it's not a court of law? The Senate mm-hmm. gets to set the rules, so you don't really know what the rules are until you're in there. I imagine the Senate, since the way the Senate functions, having worked in the Senate, they can change the rules at a moment's notice. So you're sort of yeah. working on a sheet of ice. How can you prepare either the House managers or the president's defense team for something that you're walking into basically blindfolded?
Well, first, you have to read a lot. You have to read about the impeachment of Andrew Johnson. You have to read about the impeachment of Bill Clinton. You have to read the background material on the failed or the mooted impeachment of Richard Nixon. You also have to read some of the other cases involving impeachment of judges. You read William Rehnquist's book, which dealt with the impeachments early on in our history. You read whatever is out there. Of course, I did all of that research already for my own book, so I came in very, very well prepared. And then you have to be spontaneous. I mean, the key to being a good lawyer, I kept telling my students in 50 years, the first 2 weeks in my class, you were not allowed to take notes. I confiscated pencils. You couldn't bring a computer. You had to learn how to listen. You had to learn how to listen and be spontaneous. And that's the key to being a good lawyer. You listen. You listen for nuance. You listen for surprising facts. And you make a decision on the spot. Obviously, you have to be prepared for everything before. But you need to be able to be spontaneous. You need to be able to change your battle plan depending on what senators are saying, what the media is saying. It's very much an interactive, in-the-moment decision that you have to make.
Is this impeachment process damaging to the Constitution? It is. It's a foregone conclusion, but we're now looking at a situation where they've made up allegations, they made up charges, which makes it really easy to prove. If you make up the charge, you can set the bar for proof, the burden of proof, at any point that you want. But it also seems to weaponize the most important tool in Congress's utility belt for dealing with an out-of-control executive, that now you can almost count on a spiteful reprisal of some sort. And can we pull, I guess bigger question is, can we pull up from this nosedive?
I don't think so. It's not going to be easy. Hamilton in Federalist 65 said the greatest danger, he was not known as a man who exaggerates, the greatest danger would be for there to be impeachment and removal based on partisan votes of who got the most votes, rather than on the guilt or innocence of the person being impeached. And of course, that's what we're seeing. We're seeing both in the House and the Senate. Numbers prevail. And that's not the way the framers intended impeachment to work. They intended impeachment to be extremely limited to only cases where there was massive bipartisan support, massive support among the people, and clear evidence of criminal conduct of the kind that was like treason, bribery, or the high crimes and misdemeanors. And what happens is today the Democrats take advantage of the word misdemeanors and say, well, that's a vague term. In the past, it was Republicans who took advantage of that. And I think we need one rule that fits all. We need everybody to pass what I call the shoe on the other foot test. If this were Hillary Clinton's being impeached, what would the Republicans be saying? What would the Democrats be saying? Well, we know what happened when Bill Clinton was impeached. The same Democrats who are now seeking to impeach Donald Trump were opposed to the impeachment of Clinton, saying you don't have impeachment unless there's bipartisan support.
Taking this just a little bit further out, not from Congress, but to the media and thereby the megaphone to the American people, you've witnessed the massive divide. When you no longer seem to appear on CNN, certainly not as often as you used to, or MSNBC nearly as often as you used to, if at all, but you're on Fox there. Looking at it as somebody who's been involved in the pop culture world and the law and society in general, as you being an observer for 50 plus years, how about that divide? You can live your whole life through social media and who you choose to follow, through cable news and which network you choose to watch. You can set your own reality, a lot like Plato's cave. You can construct your own cave. What are the implications for that, for individuals, for the country, and for the law? Are there anything to be wary of?
Very much so. And you put your finger on one of the most serious problems in America today, and that is people have different realities. They have different sets of facts. It was Moynihan who said you can you're entitled to your opinion, you're not entitled to your own facts. Today, people have their own facts. If you watch different networks, you just simply get simple facts. My wife and I watched the State of the Union message on two TVs, and we saw the same State of the Union message, and then it would as if we watched a different speech. You know, one side described it one way, the other side described it another way. They bore nothing in common, and yet all of us saw the same speech. So even the facts don't persuade us. We have to wait to tell us, to be told by the commentators what the facts mean. And that's a terrible thing. Today, Walter Cronkite could not get a job in the media. He's too neutral. He's too objective. He was too fact-based. Today, we don't want factual reporting. We want reporting that makes you feel good and that confirms your bias, your earlier biases. And that makes it very hard. And it goes back to my book. Many women, many feminists, many men, too, say if a woman accuses you, you have to be guilty. We're not interested in the facts. Don't tell us about your travel records. Don't play us the tape of the lawyer admitting she's wrong. Don't show us the emails that show she acknowledges never meeting you. We're not interested in that. You're a man, a white man, an old white man. She's a young woman. She's right. You're wrong. There's nothing you can do or say that's going to change our perception. That's the reality in which we live today.
Lastly for you, Professor, the book, again, Guilt by Accusation, The Challenge of Proving Innocence in the Age of Me Too. When you look back at everything that's going on and why you left the Democrats, I bring this up because I watched a video of you talking about your next book. You were a lifelong Democrat. You're no longer a Democrat. You're still a liberal, but you're no longer a Democrat. Why? Why did you leave the Democratic Party? I'm curious because I think it ties into everything we've been talking about here.
The name of my forthcoming book is Why I Left the Left But Couldn't Join the Right. I threatened to leave the Democratic Party when they were about to nominate Keith Ellison, who had worked closely with Farrakhan, to be the official leader of the Democratic Party. And I said I couldn't remain in a party that had a leader like that. They didn't elect him. They elected him deputy. So I'm still a registered Democrat. I'm still going to vote in the Democratic primaries because I want to have an influence on who the Democrats nominate. But I can't any longer identify myself as a person of the left. And if the Democrats were to nominate Sanders, I would leave the Democratic Party and I would campaign vigorously against Sanders. And largely because Sanders went to England and campaigned for Jeremy Corbyn, who was a virulent anti-Semite, virulently anti-American, virulently anti-due process and civil liberties, and for Bernie Sanders, a kid from Brooklyn, grew up just a few blocks away from me, to go to England and campaign for a man like that, for me, that's a red line. So I could not support a party that nominated him. But if the party nominates Joe Biden, Klobuchar, and some others, I could continue to support the Democrats. But I'll continue to be bipartisan. I'll criticize Democrats if they win, and I'll support candidates who I voted against if they do the right thing.
Professor Alan Dershowitz, the book Guilt by Accusation, The Challenge of Proving Innocence in the Age of Me Too. How far away from you are you going to court with these lawsuits, by the way?
Pretty close. I mean, we're in court. We have some deadlines to meet, and then there'll be discovery. I think the discovery will be very devastating to the other side. They will have to admit the lies over time and admit the emails and try to explain them, and probably they'll lie more under deposition. And that's always good for the other side when you get them to lie under oath in a deposition. Nobody likes that.
Yeah, well, hopefully you'll get some justice. Professor Dershowitz, thank you for joining us. Thank you guys for watching and listening, and we'll see you guys on Monday. Have a great weekend.